ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We are discussing the most wonderful subject in this world, a statement of fact. Many facts are being discussed in this dialogue between the Guru and the Shishya, Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi. And this also emphasizes the fact, the onus, responsibility. So if the husband falters, the wife has to support and strengthen him and turn his attention towards God. And if the same thing happens to the wife, then the husband must do the same thing. This is a sacred vow that both of us together we go to Vishnupada. This is one of the seven mantras that are uttered when a couple are getting married and they are going round the fire. So they take seven vows that our ultimate goal is to be with you. In Upanishadic language, we never want to be separate from you, and that is the, again, proved once more by the marriage of Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother. It is a most marvelous episode. Sri Ramakrishna need not have taken sannyasa, but he took sannyasa to strengthen the Guru Parampara system, sannyasa sampradaya. Swami Sharadananji goes into ecstasy, praising how Mother Ganga, knowing that one of the greatest sannyasis has taken a vow, and he will again re-establish that sannyasi sampradaya once more. But Sri Ramakrishna, unlike other monks, did not reject Holy Mother. I have taken sannyasa, so I will not keep you with me. Not only he kept Holy Mother with him, but he also asked, do you want me to behave like an ordinary husband, earning money, providing with riches, wealth, and children, and to love you, and to make you feel that I love you, or as I have chosen the path of spirituality, I want to be always with God. Can that be also your goal? And without a second thought, Holy Mother had said, yes, I have not come to put an obstruction in your path. In fact, I have come to follow you. This reminds us, this happens again and again and again in history. And these are the people who keep alive the tradition of sannyasa. Otherwise, an ideal householder's life, where along with normal pleasures, they also lead a highly spiritual life. Shudhiram and Chandramani Devi is a brilliant example. And nowadays, how many couples are following, being the followers of Sri Ramakrishna, walking in the footsteps of Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother, considering themselves as the very children of Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother. So we are discussing this Maitreyi Yajnavalkya dialogue. Actually it is called Maitreyi Brahmanam. Brahmana means nothing to do with Brahma, nothing to do with a Brahmana. It means a section, that's all. So in this chapter, it is the section specially dealing with Maitreyi's conversion from a housewife into an earnest sannyasini. Because when she asked, you teach me, she is not only telling, I will remain as a housewife, but you can teach me the, give me the spiritual instruction. She also told, give me also sannyasa. Holy Mother formerly never had taken sannyasa, but she was the greatest sannyasini. In fact, there is no difference between male and female. To say this is a sannyasi and this is a sannyasini, that is only conventionally we do that in this transactional world. But really speaking, sannyasa makes everybody exactly one and the same. Similarly, Sri Ramakrishna had categorically declared, every devotee belongs to the same caste. Sri Ramakrishna divided the whole world into two categories, devotee and a non-devotee, bhakta, abhakta. So these are the two castes. And every person who has sincere devotion belongs to that, what we call, he is a spiritual person, that's all. He is a devotee, that's all. There is no other caste. Whether he be Brahmin or Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, it doesn't really matter. So, we are going to enter into that, but a few points are there that through this dialogue between Maitreyi and Yajnavalkya, we get what are those points we have left out, we have not discussed in our last class, realizing that material possessions are useless for liberation. Maitreyi wholly rejects the property, and it was great property. In a way, we can say, as Christ said to his rich young disciple, if you want to follow me, then go home and distribute all your riches to the poor people and take up my cross and follow me. That is pure sannyasa. And before that, he asks the young man, very, very interesting topic, that have you not heard our elders teaching you of 10 commandments? That is karma yoga. And the young man says, without understanding, without realizing what he was saying, but I have been following them from my childhood. He was sincere, but very ignorant. Then Christ says, in that case, take up my cross and follow me. But the rich man, young man, returned sadly. Why did he return? He was not able to renounce his property. That means his karma yoga has not purified him sufficiently so that he can become a monk. The purpose of karma yoga is to purify our mind and equip it with what we call sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, the treasure of the 9 qualities, viveka, vairagya, etc. So we have to understand that particular standpoint, and then only what does an adhikari do? He becomes a sannyasi. Or even if he doesn't take sannyasa formally, he is more than a sannyasi. Anybody who is equipped with these 4-fold qualities is fit to hear the highest mantra. What is the mantra? It's called Mahavakya. There are, as I said, hundreds of Mahavakyas are there. So Sri Ramakrishna deliberately did not give permission to Nagamahashaya, even though he knew he was a blazing fire, more than any monk in this world. Even Swamiji respected him for that. But he said, you have to remain in the householders, reminding them, just to remind them that even in household life, one can attain the very ultimate of devotion, parabhakti. Parabhakti, supreme love, and paragnana, supreme knowledge. There is no difference. Because without love, knowledge will not come. And without knowledge, love also cannot come. The moment we come to know what is the most valuable thing, automatically our mind will acquire tremendous love. We are all searching for that knowledge only, actually speaking. So, Maitreyi, when she asked, so I can accept the property on one condition, that if it can give me immortality, Amrutattva, that beautiful word, Upanishad uses specially Amrutattva. Devatas are also called Amruta Purushas. But that is a relative, short-timed immortality. Because as soon as the punyam is exhausted, they will have to come back to earn more until their minds give up the desire. So, this young man, he was following mechanically, but he did not achieve sufficient purity of mind, chitta shuddhi. That is why the Vedas are the greatest scriptures in the world. Every scripture more or less is like that. So first part is called Karma Kanda. Second part, even though not mentioned specially, categorically, it is called Upasana Yoga. So a person advances from Karma Yoga, Karma Kanda to Upasana Kanda. And from Upasana Kanda, he naturally steps, it is a natural growth, into Jnana Kanda. So that is what the development is going to be. So Maitreyi comes to know property helps a person live comfortably. But Yajnavalkya nowhere said that comfort and happiness, comfort and pleasure, comfort and joy, they are synonymous. He didn't say that. We have to take note of it, because if that is true, more money, more comforts, more luxuries, and a person is more happy, that equation is a false equation. Rich people commit suicide, rich people kill, rich people are worried. Only difference is, rich man worries in an air-conditioned, first-class massaging sofa, whereas a poor man, he will be suffering from external heat and cold, and he is worried. But worry is the absolutely same. Only when a person acquires a special mental aptitude, and that is called happy aptitude, happy outlook. Whatever happens, he is happy, because he accepts it wholeheartedly, that either I deserve it, therefore it is coming to me, if some suffering comes, or it is meant to teach a particular lesson, etc. Yajnavalkya specifically says that wealth doesn't confer immortality, Amrutattva. And this is the teaching, without exception, of every saint in this world, whether it be Christian saint, Muslim saint, or Indian saint, or Sikh saint. They all reject wealth, not because they hate it, because they found out something far, far superior. What is superior? That which gives more happiness, lasting happiness, higher quality happiness, that is the supreme happiness. That's why under a tree, person can be extremely happy. As I repeated many times, a Zen master was once asked, because his disciples found him always happy, cheerful, unselfish, even though externally he has to undergo so many trials and tribulations. He said very pithy words. When it is winter, I say it is winter. When it is summer, I say it is summer. That means I am not going to complain. Summer will be hot, winter will be cold. Oh, it is so cold. What else do you expect in cold season? And what else do you expect excepting heat in summer season? But it is nothing to do with, not only with seasons. It is any event that takes place, positive or negative, they remain equanimous in their lives. Sitoshna sukha dukhesu tatha manapa manoyoho samaha sanga vivarjitaha. They are happy. It doesn't mean he will be like a stone. He will be most happy person. Why? He is with God. So, Maitreyi rejects this proposition. But interestingly, Katyayani was not that spiritual. Very good person, chaste wife. But she doesn't want, at this time, spirituality. So she accepts meekly what is her part. Now Maitri also gives up. Of course, we do not know what happened after this. What happened to Maitri? What happened to Yajnavalkya? The story doesn't continue. But for our purpose, the lesson that every husband and wife have a duty toward more than physical happiness, physical comforts, loving physically, materially, they have a higher purpose in life. The purpose of marriage is to be married to God. So in Christianity, every nun is called a bride, and the Jesus Christ is called a bridegroom, and several parables are also there with regard. I will not go into it now. So she rejects outright and says, what shall I do with the wealth by which I cannot become immortal? And requests that Yajnavalkya bestow upon her what he knew, because he was a Vidvat Sannyasi. He knew, he was a realized soul. So when he was a householder, we have to presume he went to answer the announcement done by Janaka Maharaja that whoever is the greatest Brahmavid, not only scholarly, but practicing in life, I want such a person to be my spiritual guide. That was the real intention of Janaka. So, he had made even Janaka Maharaja a knower of Brahman. If he could do that as a householder, what to speak of sannyasa? Why was he taking sannyasa? As I mentioned, because they feel an inner prompt from God. If people like you take sannyasa, other people will be also encouraged by you. So, pleased with Maitri's sincere quest for what is called Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, he accepts her as his disciple. So the relationship of husband and wife is now transformed into Guru and Sishya. So then Yajnavalkya starts that what is the way that we can detach ourselves from the world? What is our problem? What is the whole of Karma Kanda about? Even Upasana Kanda about? There is very interesting subject matter here, Upasana Kanda. We are always speaking about, thinking about God. But in India, there are several contemplators of Hayagriva, of Saraswati, of Sharadamba, of Lakshmi, of Bala. Bala is another name for the Divine Mother, Upasakas of Kali, etc. So, the purpose is not spiritual. The purpose is to obtain something great. So great scholars have come out of it. In South India, Hayagriva Upasana, that is the Surya Deva, is called also Hayagriva. Haya means horse. Griva means the head, whose head looks like a horse, but he is a Surya Devata. So, Yajnavalkya himself has worshipped the Surya Devata and he obtained the whole of this Yajurveda. That's why it is called Shukla Yajurveda. Whereas previously also, he learnt Yajurveda. I think I had mentioned this story earlier, but when we were talking about Taittiriya Upanishad, but it is better that I repeat it, because this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is part of the Shukla Yajurveda, and the Shukla Yajurveda was taught to him by Surya Deva in the form of Hayagriva. In Andhra Pradesh, there is one of the great extraordinary contemporary Upasaka, we call it, of Hayagriva. He was called Bellam Konda Ramaraya Kavi. He was a great admirer of Shankaracharya, has written several works improving so that we can understand Shankaracharya much better way. And one of the interesting works was Shankara Ashankara Vimarsha Bhashya. Beautiful 400 pages work that how to understand Shankaracharya, how to reply to the opposite schools of Vedanta Advaita and Visishtadvaita, and why Shankara is right, etc.
My purpose is not to talk about these people, but to say that upasana can be done even for worldly purposes. But these are great people. Sooner or later, once this desire is fulfilled, then they turn towards God, like what happened to Pandit Gauri. He wanted to obtain moksha. He did upasana of the mother, divine mother, and as a result obtained some boons. He could perform a yajna on his left hand, lighting it up with his outstretched palm and doing homam for nearly 2 to 2.5 hours. We cannot stretch out our hand even more than few minutes. We immediately start getting intolerable pain, but such a heavy load of wooden sticks and nearly 2 hours, the fire is lighted there and the offerings or oblations are poured into that, but nothing happens to his hand. He worshipped his own wife as the divine mother, just as Sri Ramakrishna worshipped on Falaharini Kali Puja, Holy Mother. Similarly, this Gauri Pandit could defeat any scholar in scholarship. But along with his worldly desires, he also became purified after perhaps fulfilling some of these desires. He wanted to become liberated, so he prayed and then he obtained. He died in Kashi and obtained liberation. So whoever worships God, even if we begin to worship God only for a worldly purpose in mind, ultimately God will give us liberation, because a mother will not give an inferior thing to her children. So this is the reply we can give to some of these misunderstanding and mistalking Advaitins who say the devotees who want to go to Kailasa or Vaikuntha, they will not get liberation. Who are these people to talk like that? Do they not know that the Divine Lord, pleased with the devotion of anybody, he can give liberation? Do you think he will withhold liberation and keep them deluded with his ignorance? Even after these people were enjoying, for some time they will enjoy. But then he awakens that ultimate knowledge in them, says, my children, now you have enjoyed, Leela is over, now go back to from where you have come. This is the philosophy of duality. We have to keep in mind. That is why Sri Ramakrishna says, one can realize God by any path. But then he added something again and again, repeatedly. You can follow, anybody can follow any path they want. But one succeeds in attaining liberation only by the grace of God. That is why in India, every religion is called dharma. Hindu dharma, Muslim dharma, or Christian dharma. But Bhagavan Krishna is squeezed at the very essence of all the Upanishads, and he tells in the end, sarva dharman parityajya. So you practice, reach the very ultimate. These paths, these religious paths can bring you. But then, finally, you will have to surrender yourself totally. Oh Lord, I can only come up to here by your grace. Now, you will have to do the last step. Pull us into you. Make us become one with you. This is Sri Ramakrishna's special teaching. Only through mother's grace, one can attain liberation. Even if we follow any path, what does these paths really do? If we practice them faithfully, then these paths, very paths, make us completely surrender ourselves to God. They make us understand, O Jiva, you have no other way but to surrender yourself to the Divine Mother. There is no other way. This is the only way. That is what following faithfully, sincerely, every spiritual path does. It takes us to the ultimate, but the final liberation is possible only by God's grace. Mahashuchaha, do not worry. If you surrender yourself to me, I will liberate you. So I will do whatever is necessary. Because I am the mother who gave you birth to you, with the whole creation. This is a special teaching. Even a gnani cannot attain liberation without mother's grace. Now think for a moment why Totapuri fell into the maya. Even though he once tasted Nirvikalpa Samadhi, because he did not surrender himself to the Divine Mother. But once he surrendered himself to the Divine Mother, then Mother's grace fell upon him. And his own disciple now became bestowed his grace, her grace upon him, because Sri Ramakrishna and Mother Kali are not two separate beings at all. So Yajnavalkya accepted, then Yajnavalkya delves into it, says, how can we become detached from this world? So that is where the finest psychological analysis of what is called attachment starts here. Only instead of saying attachment, we say we love. Actually, we don't love. Attachment means what? We have a misunderstanding that if I obtain this object, I can get happiness, pleasure, joy out of it. If I eat this sweet, I will get happiness. So we identify pleasure or joy or happiness with that particular object as if that object possesses that and is capable of giving us what we are seeking. But no, Yajnavalkya analyzes psychologically, and then what does he tell us? So our ananda is covered by what? By our desire. Desires cover our true nature. A desire makes us feel that I am not full, I am lacking something. That is called desire. I must become full. So if I get nice food, nice clothes, money, etc., then I will become full. No, like the seventh bag of the yaksha. It will never be filled up at all. So Yajnavalkya is telling, if a husband loves wife, wife loves husband, parents love children, children love parents, brothers and sisters love brothers and sisters, or we love our co-religionists, we love the people of our country or of our language, etc., etc., that is not love at all. So we get it. That is called attachment. What is love? That I can love you, but any time I can withdraw my mind from you because I dwell in a different place. I am attached to something different, but to whom, to which I am attached, that love I can bestow upon you, not to get anything from you, but out of sheer unselfishness, I can share my love with you. That is the outlook of a gnani. What about us? Why does a husband love the wife? Why does a wife love her husband? Because they have desires, physical, not only in the form of desire for progeny, children, but in wealth, servants, comforts, name and fame, innumerable desires. But no object can give us. That is what Sri Ramakrishna says, like a camel chewing a thorny bush, like a dog worrying a dry bone. But both of them get their gums are injured, then they get bleeding, they get blood, and then they mistakenly think that blood, in this ear, blood means what? Pleasure comes from them. So that is a mistake. So what is this analysis of love? Nobody loves anybody. Everybody loves happiness. And we think happiness comes from an object. But what happens? Either happiness or unhappiness are not the intrinsic qualities of any object. Because the same object can give us sometimes happiness, sometimes unhappiness. No object can give us both happiness and unhappiness at the very same moment. So one after the other is fine, not simultaneously. So what happens? That my ananda, which is my nature, is suddenly clouded over, covered up, and Sri Ramakrishna illustrates it beautifully with the example of a towel. One day he was sitting at Dakshineswar, and a small towel would always be on his shoulders. So some devotees were there, and then he says, "See, I am so near to you, but if I put this towel in front of my face, even though I am so near to you, you can't see my face." Like that, God is everywhere, in front, behind, above, below, inside, outside, everywhere God is there. But we can't see because we are covered by ignorance. Anyway, coming back to this subject, what happens when we enjoy a pleasure? What happens? That we have a desire, I am lacking some pleasure, say eating pleasure. So I see some tasty food and then I start eating. So this desire covers my own happiness. Eating the food removes that desire, because as soon as my stomach is full, I feel full, I feel that I do not need food, that is called fullness. That desire is gone, and to that extent, with regard to that particular object called food, my ananda, which was covered by the desire, by the lacuna of food, it is re-available to us. And this is the same thing that happens with regard to every object in this world. So what is the lesson we have to learn? No object possesses any love. We are also objects. So we do not possess ananda, happiness. But if somebody loves us or experiencing us, then that experience removes their own hidden ananda and it becomes easily available to them. So in a way of speaking, every object acts like a mirror showing the true nature of each one of us. That is how we have to understand. That is the first thing. Second thing we have to understand is nobody loves anything unless he gets a pleasure. It is a conditional love. If I get happiness, and if I get so long as I get, and only when I get so much, I am attached to you. That's why many times I give the example of squeezing all the juice from sugar cane. Once I am able to squeeze out all the juice, which gives me pleasure, the sugar cane is spat out. Nobody will keep it any longer. The same thing with everything in this world. Man squeezes some pleasure out of woman. Woman also does the same thing out of man. So the moment we get, that object is no more wanted. And so every object acts as if to uncover our own real happiness. This is the philosophy. And everything that we love is a conditional love. What is that condition? So long as that object yields sufficient amount. Otherwise, you know, you buy a car, it has met an accident and it is not working properly and we are not getting what we expect from that car. Whether it is new or old, it doesn't matter. Then we try to get rid of it as soon as possible. And that is with regard to every object in this world. No exception is to be found. So that is why everything that we are attached not to the object, but to the pleasure or happiness we are expecting to get when we come into contact with that particular object. The moment the object fails to deliver the goods, then we become detached. Not only detached, we may become disgusted. We may even hate. Friends become enemies, hateable objects, because what we were deriving, now the opposite is coming to us. So this is called conditional love. What are the 2 points we discussed just now? No object is loved for its own sake, but we expect to get some amount of happiness from that object. Many times our expectations far exceed the real capability of that object. So second is that we love that object only so long as the yield. So no object is ever loved. But on the contrary, everybody loves unconditionally one's own self. So if this object cannot give me happiness, I am in search of some other object which will give me happiness. We don't put any condition because we are Ananda Swarupa, Sat Chit Ananda. So if our existence is threatened, then we become panicky. If our awareness becomes subjected to troubles, we try to get out of it. We don't want to be unconscious. Even our very existence is in danger if we are not conscious of it. Only when we are aware, I am, then only I know I am. Otherwise, an unconscious person doesn't even know whether he is alive, dead, conscious, unconscious. He doesn't know anything at all. So these two points, every object is loved only not for the sake of the object, but for what we are expecting to derive that happiness, pleasure, joy, whatever name you call it. And every object is limited. Therefore, no object is capable of giving unlimited happiness. It is bound by time, space, and conditions. On the other hand, the Atman is unconditionally loved. We want to survive and we want to increase our knowledge, awareness, and there is no limit how much happiness we want, unlimited happiness we want. Why does such a desire arise within us? Because the Upanishad tells us that is our real nature. The body is not our real nature. Mind is not our real nature. The three states, that is waking, dream and deep sleep, are not our real nature. Instinctively, we seek only our own true infinite self where there is no duality present at all. That's why earlier also I mentioned in this very Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, three mantras have come. They are called Abhyaroha mantras. And even an amoeba must be praying, I don't want to die. I don't want to be unconscious because there is no difference between death and unconsciousness. And I don't want to be suffering. These are common features of every living creature. So the unconscious prayer is Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amrutangamaya. This is the fact of life. We have to understand it. So, unconsciously we are struggling, but we are searching in the wrong place, limited place. We are saying we want unlimited happiness, but we are saying only, we are only seeking only, knowing fully well, because every object is changing. Changing means what? So long as it is capable of giving some happiness, but it changes. And when happiness changes, what does it change into? Unhappiness. What is attractive changes into unattractive. And what is valued changes into non-valued. So this applies universally. So that is what Yajnavalkya wants to say. Why is he telling? Because in one way is an answer. Can I get immortality through wealth? No. You can get immortality not because you are going to get it from somewhere. You are immortal, but you have forgotten. Every teaching, spiritual teaching, is only to remind ourselves that you don't need to seek anywhere. You don't need to obtain it. All that you need to remove is the wrong notion that I am limited. That means my happiness is limited. My existence is limited. My knowledge is also limited. So with the idea of limitedness, when we remove that idea of limitedness, we remain alone. Not only we remain alone, we become one with the entire universe. Because in infinity, There is no minus, plus, division, multiplication. Nothing is possible. This is the essence. So Yajnavalkya begins his instruction by logically establishing a wonderful truth. The self is of nature of supreme bliss. Only the self, nothing else. He proves this by conducting a psychological analysis of the nature of human love. He reveals the unpalatable but universal truth that nobody loves any object or any person for the sake of that object or person. Everything is loved solely for the sake of one's own self. Another beautiful example, every mother loves her children. She will not extend that love even to neighbor's children. And I am afraid to speak out, even one sister will not extend that love to the children of other sisters. How many murders have taken place when it is a question of one's child is going to inherit the property or the kingdom? How many murders have taken place and are still taking place, positions, etc., etc. So, Yajnavalkya beautifully analyzes unconditional love. So, this love is directly, solely directed towards one's own self. Why? Because it is inborn, universal, completely independent of any external conditions. That means we don't need to do anything. It is always available in unlimited quantities, everywhere, time, space, and conditions, they do not obstruct, limit it. Because this love never wavers, never grows, never becomes less. So, it is our own true nature. That is, unconditional love is only towards the self. Unconditional love. This love is directed towards everything other than the self. That is called anatma. It is a cultivated, temporary affection. Why is it cultivated? You don't know somebody. The baby doesn't know its mother. Mother doesn't know its baby until she conceives and she cherishes tremendous attraction. This is my baby, and goes on looking after herself. So, mainly for the purpose of protecting the baby. So, no object can ever replace our love for the Atman. Because every object is changing, limited, therefore temporary, and temporary affection can only give temporary joy, and we have to remember temporary joy can turn into temporary sorrow also. So, when conditions are favorable, a bit of that bliss is squeezed, which we call happiness. When not, then we suffer a lot. The moment an object or relationship brings pain or ceases to fulfill our expectations, that very love will turn into not only rejection, sometimes even untrimmed hatred. So, by analyzing this, Yajnavalkya proves that Atma alone is of the nature of real bliss. We are that Atman, while everything else is either a source of sorrow or fake joy. Fleeting joy is called, some people call it fake joy. A true seeker must develop dispassion, not by hating the world, but by ceasing to expect. That is the true detachment. A housemaid does everything in the house, calls my Rama, my Hari, but she knows nothing belongs to me. I have my own home. So, what are we doing? So, whom we love, we expect them to give. If they fail to give, if they give it to others, then we become murderers, even kill other people. So, we are expecting permanent joy. Even though our bodies and minds are themselves changing every second, even though we are impermanent, we are expecting joy from worldly objects, which are only temporary. So, according to Advaita, so, the self, we are the self, and we have to realize the self, because the self is the only source, infinite source, of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Now, Yajnavalkya turns his mind and he commands practically. Atmava Are Drashtavyaha. Like Sri Ramakrishna, the goal of life is to realize God. And then for that, that's what Drashtavyaha means, to be realized. Then what is the way? Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Probably, more or less we can say, Shravana belongs to holy company, cultivating holy company. Manana, go into solitude and think of God deeply, pondering how temporary our objects and also discrimination, everything is changing, and that we have to do, develop in solitude. That is manana. What is nididhyasana? I am real, jnana marga. I am really the self. So I have to know that I am the self, not that I have to one day get the self which I am not now. I was the self, and I will be the self. But I have forgotten temporarily, and that is why it is called maya. For that, three steps are there given. So, atmava are mantavyaha, shrotavyaha, mantavyaha, nididhyasitavyaha. Here, you get the exact words. First, shravana, then manana, then nididhyasana. So, about these beautiful subjects, there are some very important points. We will discuss them in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Saritva Pranamami Mohur Mohoho. May the Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.